And so everybody else probably, I'm assuming, you're just a volunteer, you're serving, you're leading in some capacity at your church, eh? Right? Yeah. Awesome. So we're just so glad that all of you are here. Just real quick, I grew up in the same church my entire life. My parents met in Bible school here in the early 80s and moved back to northeastern Ohio. We're like an hour south of Cleveland and like an hour northwest of Pittsburgh, right in the center. And I am a Cavaliers fan, and I just wanted to let you know that. And we're gonna make it through. It's been a rough week for us. Pray for us. But so my parents, they're still the senior pastors. They planted our church in 1983. And just gone through a ton of different changes and shifts in the last 10 years. And we're in this place now where we're definitely kind of in this transition process that's happening in stages. And so we just wanted to kind of pull back the curtain in this panel and tell you kind of what our thought process is, and hopefully, maybe from some of the mistakes we've made, maybe from some of the things we've learned, we can add some value to your context, to your churches. So here's what I know. I think most of us, if we're honest, would say, hey, especially the people that have been in ministry and in the game for a while, we would say we want to reach the next generation. Like, there's nobody that's ever said, I don't want to reach the next generation. I think the challenge is we just don't know where to start. Sometimes it's just, what is the practical first step that I can take? Now, I don't know if you're aware of this, but this is so fitting. I mean, you can see what God is doing through this conference in all of these different sessions. We're saying the same thing. I don't know if you're aware of this, but there is a succession crisis in America right now. I was just looking at the Kinnaman Group and listening to some stats from a study that they just did with Barna. And one of the things that they're finding very alarming is that over the last 25 years, the average age of a pastor in America has gone up 11 years. So it used to be 44 years old was the average age of a pastor. Now it's 55. And that isn't necessarily alarming. So if you're above that, that's not something to be ashamed of. That's an incredible thing. But what they're seeing is there's kind of this vacuum or this gap that's being left behind. And there's no succession plan for after they're gone. And so you'll see on your notes here, this is just stuff that you can take back and kind of apply to your context later. But I just thought, man, is there a better scenario to model after than Elijah and Elisha? I mean, talk about a generational shift and transfer done well. And so, you know, there's two things happening in this equation that I just want to hit on real quick. And we want to give the other guys a chance to talk and get to some Q&A. But I love this because it works both ways. I just want to point that out. Sometimes I think we can blame the millennials, you know, and there's that really popular viral Simon Sinek video right now. I don't know if you guys have seen that. Super good points and all true. We could put all the blame there, or we can kind of swing the pendulum and blame the boomers or the builders or whoever it is. And I think the responsibility lies in both on both sides. And so I just thought it was fascinating because here you have this amazing man of God that's done these amazing things, and all of a sudden, rumor starts getting around in the school of prophets. We all know the story. He's going to be taken. And so Elisha, his successor, he starts to be asked by all of the prophets, hey, what do you know that your master's going to be taken? And there's this critical conversation that happens. And this is a conversation that every pastor needs to have with the next generation. He asked them this one question. When they reached the other side, Elijah said to Elisha, what can I do for you before I'm taken from you? And if I could just sum up the thing that my parents have done so well, so many of the people like the Shears and the Grafts and the Swans, so many amazing pastors here, what they're doing so well is they're asking that critical question, what can I do for you before I'm taken from you? Now, here's what I find really interesting. The answer is such a humble answer, and it just shows you that Elisha's heart is in the perfect place. Here's what he says. He says, your life repeated in my life, I want to be a holy man just like you. And some people would, you know, teach you wanted a double portion, you know, of his calling. It's so cool to hear him say that. But here's what I want to challenge, first of all, the older generation with. Hey, is your life a life worth repeating? You know, sometimes we're like so concerned that the next generation isn't following us. But when we start to examine what we're doing and we start to really look at the core, it's something that's not stirring up a passion in the people that are going to follow us. And I don't know if you guys have ever heard this, but I stumbled onto this. It's a breakdown of why customers quit in business. This is really fascinating. Listen to this. So this is just in the average business. These are why customers quit. 1% die. So they lose a customer, okay? So that's a small percentage. How about this? 3% move away. 5% other friendships. And apply this to your church. This is very similar. 9% they lose them to other competition. 14% product dissatisfaction. But listen to this. 68% of the customers quit because of an attitude of indifference to the product. And if I just start looking at, man, the things that drew me to have a passion at our church growing up, even before I had any ownership, it was because I didn't have an indifference to the product called ministry and called the church, but it was because I saw this passion in my parents and because they brought me into the equation and they say, hey, what can we do for you and through you to help prepare you to take this further than we could do it? And think about Jesus. I mean, the way that Jesus empowered people was he would actually come up to them. And what did he say? He had these famous words, come follow me, right? He was never indifferent. And he wasn't just saying, come follow me on my ministry tour because it's going to be really awesome and we're going to go on the conference circuit. He was like, come follow me and come die with me. Like, it was the greatest ask ever. And so for some of us, I think we even need to think about the vision because, man, you want more volunteers in your church and you want younger people to be attracted. Vision is a volunteer magnet. And if you don't have vision, then you're going to struggle with volunteers for the rest of your ministry. And so those are just some little things. And here's what I think is really fascinating. There was one requirement given by Elijah. He said, that's a hard one. Your life, my life repeated in yours. But then he said this, but if you're watching what I'm taking from you, you'll get what you've asked for. Everybody just turn to your neighbor real quick and say, you'll get what you've asked for.
You'll get what you've asked for.
That's just the bottom line. Only if you're watching. And so I just put it this way. I alliterated it for you because I'm a preacher. Proximity is the place where passion is transferred. And if I can think back to the moments in my life where there was a passion that got lit inside of me, it was because my dad and my mom and the people ahead of me allowed me to get close enough to get what they had. And so I just want to encourage you, that's kind of my little nugget, is how are you intentionally calling people to follow Jesus as you follow him? And how are you showing them passion by creating intentional moments of proximity where they can see ministry done? Think about Jesus going away with Peter, James, and John. He didn't care how it made the rest of the group feel. He would show them a ministry moment, and he would ask them, why do you think I did what I did? Then he would explain it to them, and then they would be able to go and do that themselves. So those are just a few things that I'm kind of chewing on in my life and processing. I hope that helps you. And I'm going to hand it over to the Jason Swan.
At this point, we're going to try and ask questions. So because we're all talking about different conversations and different approaches, it can get a little overwhelming and you might forget because Joe's stuff is phenomenal. And we want to give you an opportunity to kind of ask some questions in there. So does anybody have anything you want to ask Joe about the talk that he just gave? If it's general, wait until the end. If it's about the talk that he just gave, then ask now. Does that make sense?
So many rules. So what are some practical opportunities as far as things that you've done to create intentional ministry proximity, so to speak?
Yeah, so good question, Jad. You just said, what are some ways that you're intentionally creating proximity? Mm-hmm. I'm going to just spread this around because I think you guys have all, you've all experienced this. Who wants to weigh in on that?
It's not fair for any of us to answer this question in all honesty, not to you, because we're all sons. And because of that, there's a natural proximity. It's not fair. The experiences we've had, like I said this on Sunday morning to our whole church, my dad gave this incredible talk about reaping and sowing. And he's lived it his whole life. He's lived this principle. And I said from the stage, I said, I'm grateful because I've seen it from the front seat in the auditorium. I've seen it from the back seat of a car, that this is who you are and this is how you live your life. So it's not fair. We get a natural proximity. I don't know how to answer that for someone else.
I think that's for sure true. I mean, I think about Jesus. You know, Jesus had no earthly sons, but there was something in him that would compel people to follow him, you know? And so I think that for me, I'll give you a great example. Like right now, I'm going through this season where I'm just trying to soak in everything that my dad and my mom can teach me. And so they're creating these moments. Like, for instance, we have board of trustee meetings once a quarter. And I haven't sat in those my entire life. I haven't wanted to. It's not like, you know, it wasn't on my bucket list or anything. And I don't think I have a ton to add in the way of value to those conversations. They're talking about budgets and leisures and, you know, things that just are not on my wavelength. But one day, I'm going to be involved in those. And so just being there, proximity creates this passion in me that says, you know what, I see the connection that helps us with our vision and our mission. You know, it could be anything. Like, I've watched I've had so much passion transferred to me just by watching my dad deal with difficult decisions. And I'm going to just ask you to interchange, my dad with the person that maybe God's placed in your life. Every one of us has somebody. Like, we should all have a Paul, and we should all have a Timothy. There should be someone in your life with some gray hairs that's a little bit further ahead that can help you, and there should be somebody that is not as far along as you that you can intentionally create some proximity with and transfer your passion to them. So does that help, Jed? Awesome. We can keep it moving.
Going once, going twice.
How's everybody doing? My name is Taylor Shear. I am from here, Dutch Church, Tulsa, Oklahoma. I just want to speak a little bit, as we were talking about what we were going to talk about here, was with next generation leadership, and how I took that was, I think like these guys here, we're trying to find our place in our local church, and where we are, where we're headed. I thought that the first session this morning was spot on, just stuff that I think we're, in our case, we're all dealing with, whether we want to admit it or not. So I just want to talk a little bit to the younger guys who would be the sons in the situation, but hopefully it also brings insight to the fathers in the room. So I have a dad. If you guys have not met my dad, you'll meet him tonight at the night session. You'll hopefully have sympathy for me because that's what I've grown up with. But I'll tell you, there's a few things that have made this very interesting for us. So ever since I can remember, he has been my best friend. He was the best man at my wedding while he also married me. He has been my pastor, my boss. Nobody gets fired from the church. I've been fired 3 times. But he's been my pastor, my boss, my dad. I mean, it's a bunch of different hats to the point where I would even say, what hat are you wearing today? Like, where is this coming from? Is this coming from pastor, from dad, or what is it? But I'll tell you that the biggest thing for me is they never pushed ministry on me. They never said, while everybody else did, hey, you're the next, you're the one taking it. They never pushed it. They let me make the decision for myself. So that has always been a relieving thing for me, is it's never been like this expectation from my parents on me to then be in ministry, where I was able to come to that decision myself. But also, for me, the biggest thing that I have been dealing with and am dealing with is just making sure that honor comes into every single area of my life and how I deal with the church and with my dad. Because it gets to the point where I cannot talk to him like I do at home here in the offices, or here at church, or I can't disagree with him how I would at home. And just that there's honor there, because this is his baby. This is what he started from absolutely nothing 25 years ago, and now look at what it's been. And that has been his whole life. And to kind of echo, who he is on stage is who he is at home. Whether you like him or not, that's who he is. It's not, hey, I'm putting up this front. So I've been able to see that. So there's an honor there in how I can serve him. And that's kind of where the pride that Jonathan talked a little bit about this morning is accurate, because I have my things I want to do. I have my dreams and my accomplishments and things like that. But it's falling into place and knowing that while I thought I knew everything at 16 years old, I now know that I knew nothing. Or what's it going to be like further down the road when I look back at this time? So for me, it's about honor. And my goal through the last, year and a half or 2 years has been just my sole mission is to fulfill the vision that he has. Because while I am, and this is, it doesn't make sense. It doesn't make sense to your human mind, but it's me fulfilling his vision that sets it up to where my vision is fulfilled. So it's just been a place of honoring. And there's a few things that I've done as safeguards for myself, because I can push just about anything to make happen. Like, I'm fully confident that I can make just about anything happen. So I've had to take a step back. And for instance, speaking from the stage in main service, I've spoken twice now from the main stage ever. And I have said when we started, where I came on in this role, I was never going to ask to speak because I could push it. But I also don't, I thought I was ready. I would have told you that I was ready, but I don't know if I was ready. Because there's a weight and there's a pressure. And as you older guys know, there's a pressure that comes with the role. So it's been just an interesting deal for me in this and how I've navigated it. But when it comes down to it, if there's honor there, it's all good. And I know that my answers are yes, sir, and I'm getting in line to fulfill his vision, knowing that it's setting me up to where I don't see some of the traps and some of the pitfalls that people make, but he sees those out in front of me. So then he is warning me of those before I even get to them. So I think the biggest thing, and basically just what I wanted to portray, was that just as a younger guy, understand that there has to be honor involved. Because if there's honor involved, then it's most of the time you're going to be in the right place. That I'm not trying to push anything through, you know, and I'm working through things in my own head, but it's like, man, I just have to trust. But there's an honor there that I trust him, and I would do whatever just to get in line with that, knowing that then my ministry is going to be blessed throughout that.
Yeah.
So, that's good. Any questions?
How old are you?
How old am I? I'm 30 years old. 31 in like 10 days. So, well, thank you. I appreciate that. But yeah, it's just been and the hard thing is you asked about 30 and you talked about the average age, but it feels like every pastor's young. So I'm like, man, am I missing time at this point? Like, I'm about to be 31. Am I slow to the game? And that's where you just have to trust the process. Like Joel Embiid for the 76ers. Trust the process. It'll all work out.
Yeah. Any more questions?
Is there an age, you guys are all pastor's sons, like two sons that work for me. Is there an age where it kind of clicks in a little bit more where you're not as resistant? I'm not saying my
31.
Okay. You know, things slow down. Making sense why we're doing what we're doing,
yeah.
And you're not pushing against.
Yeah, I would say, like, when you graduate college, you assume that you're going to make $100,000 a year right out the gate, and everything is going to come easy. You know everything because you know the textbook. When in all reality, for me, it took me trying things and failing and trying things and then succeeding, just finding where the place was. It's like, okay, this is what I want to do, where for me, it was about breaking the thought process of I want to be successful in business, so then comes wealth, and then I can do whatever I want. When in all reality, it got to the age that there's a purpose, like that I realized that there's a purpose for what I do, that I'm not coming up. And for instance, me and my wife have a business, and I don't take a salary from the church, yet I work full-time, and that's always – it's. Since I can remember, that's been a goal of mine, is to work for the church and not take a salary. So it's been cool because it's put me in a place to where I'm not here because I want a paycheck, that I'm here because I want to be here. So when I'm getting, as my dad likes to call it, pruned, I'm here because I want to be pruned. I want to be better, knowing that I'm avoiding things down the road that could end up being huge down.
Ago to a 30-year-old millennial guy that's just done a great job. And I have two daughters, and they have married two great guys that none of them are in ministry. One daughter's a paralegal, the other's in business. But they all four love Jesus. They give me six grandchildren. So I've been pouring my life into my grandchild. I took my 12-year-old with me on a missions trip this summer. It was a rite of passage, man, the kind of deal. My question is, you know, I wonder sometimes how do I pour into them? They don't fit the profile. I've been more apostolic, pioneering churches. They were with me in a part of that and planting churches and passing them off more than I can count. But you know, now they're in. You know, my daughters and my sons that they married are in their 30s, and I'm just thinking, you know, what do I? You know, I've been praying all morning about this. You know, Lord, this fire is in me, but what do I do now? What suggestions would you make for the fathers or mothers out there that are at this stage that don't have kids in ministry, but they love the Lord, but they're just living their lives and their families, and they're committed, they're going to church, but any advice about that? What you would, you know what I'm saying? Something genuine, something authentic.
Oh, for sure.
That doesn't fit the I know the profile of just passing the church off or something like Jonathan.
We haven't talked yet.
I'd love to hear just any
your
ideas here.
Yeah, so the world currently is a bummer. I don't know if you know that or not. It feels like you get your teeth kicked in every day. And I'll tell you, I have a 10-month-old, and that's our first, and I'm just looking at things, and things are how they're going. For me, the greatest asset of my parents is that they are rock solid. That it doesn't matter what is happening, good, bad, it does not matter, that I can go to them, and I know that I'm there sometimes when it feels like life is just a, like that day could just be a whirlwind, that I load up my wife and my kid and we just go over to my parents' house. And it's just, there's no agenda. There's not, hey, we'll pick up dinner and bring it over, whatever it is. And it's just because we can go there and it kind of calms everything, if that makes sense.
Yep.
So I would say that for me, the practical thing is that has been the biggest thing for me, is I can go to their house and it's just, it's calm. You almost forget about, you know, the world's coming to an end every day, to where we're able to just go over and just relax, and that it's just that they're that foundation. And again, it's because who Dad is on stage is who he is in the office, is who he is at home. I know I can go home and it's, hey, it's not a big deal. We win. Good news is we win. And it's like, oh, okay, we're good. No issues there.
Any more questions?
Go for it, Mike.
All right.
Me, you?
You
want me to
go?
I'll go. It's up to you.
I'll go. You can go
Terrence,
last, brother.
I'll go last.
You can go last, okay. All right. My name is Michael Graff. My dad is Pastor Jim Graff, and so I lead worship at Faith Family Church, lead the worship department. I'm not a preacher, but I have been doing that for a little while now. And first of all, I just want to say I've gotten to see just firsthand so much as a pastor's kid. And so I see a lot of people in here who have pastored for a long time. And I just, first of all, just like Joe did, I just want to say thank you guys. Thank you for being here and listening to us, first of all. But thank you just for the heart that you've lived with and everything, all the sacrifices that you've made to be where you are. Because I know it's not easy. You know, I've gotten to see it as a kid. And so, you know, for me, this talk, I don't necessarily feel qualified to talk about this, except just from the perspective of watching my dad and just growing up in the church. And so what I did, what I put together was, and I put it wrong on my notes, so I'm already off to a bad start, but I looked at Moses and Joshua in the Bible, and I just thought, what a great example of passing on a work of God to another generation. You know, Moses led, he was an amazing man. He led them out of captivity. But it took that transfer to Joshua to be able to lead them into the promised land. And so I thought, well, what can I learn from them? And what can we learn from them in today? So it's not about Aaron. It's about Joshua. And I just, four quick things that came to mind for me. And mine is more of a perspective of, I think as millennials and as this next generation, what are we looking for? What do we need from the people ahead of us, from the generation ahead of us, to be able to step into kind of our calling, to be able to keep things moving forward, and so it doesn't kind of all fall apart and in here, you know, so that we can be, so that we can fulfill, continue on the vision that God places in the hearts of the people that have spent, you know, their life building what you guys have built. So the first thing, this comes from Exodus 17:9. Moses said to Joshua, "Choose some of our men and go out to fight the Amalekites. Tomorrow I will stand on the top of the hill with the staff of God in my hands." And so my first kind of thought was, you know, Moses recognized Joshua's potential. And not only did he recognize his potential, he gave him something to do. He gave him something to act on. And I think that's a fairly obvious thing. But I know for me, like in the worship department, a lot of times when I'm looking for potential, I'm looking to fill like a specific need. It's not always easy to recognize someone's potential because I might be looking for someone who can sing or someone who can play electric guitar or something like that. So I'll miss a lot of potential because I'm looking for a need. And So kind of the thought that I had is, as a church, are we doing things to fill a need, or are we doing things that allow people to plug in and reach their potential? Are we creating opportunities for young people, for millennials, for the next generation, for people, period, to plug in and reach their potential? Or are we so focused sometimes on what we're trying to pull off? And so I know sometimes myself, I find myself looking more towards a need than to develop people into their potential. So I think that is something pretty crucial, because there's a lot of skill and passion in the millennial generation. And I've seen kind of a lot of times it's either misplaced or we don't know what to do with it. And what better place than the church to plug in, whether it's a passion for creativity, whether it's a passion for, you know, social media, whatever it may be, you know, the passion directed to the church is the best thing. So are we creating, are we recognizing potential, are we giving people the opportunity to plug into that? The second thing, Exodus 17:10, verse 13, Joshua fought the Amalekites as Moses had ordered. And Moses, Aaron, I put way too much of the scripture on there. You can read it later if you want. But it talks about how they fought the Amalekites as Moses has ordered. Moses stood on the mountain with his hands in the air. When they grew tired, they took a stone, put it under him, supported him. And when his hands were in the air, they were winning the battle. When they came down, you know, they weren't. And I just thought, you know, Moses had a vision, and he had values worth fighting for. And that vision didn't die there, but he instilled that in Joshua. He instilled that in the next generation, to the point that when he was up on the mountain overlooking it all, just with his hands in the air, just showing support, just showing, hey, I'm here. These guys wanted to give their lives. They wanted to fight for the vision that God gave Moses. And I think, you know, I would imagine after, like I said earlier, I salute so many people in here that have been at this thing for 20, 30, some people probably 40 years and beyond in this room. And I don't know. I'm not there. I haven't even lived that long. But I would imagine sometimes there can be there's a tiredness that comes with that. It's been a long time. And I would just say to you guys that, you know, Moses, you know, you may still be out there in the battlefield, and if you, that's great. Moses, that wasn't his role at that time in his life, but the passion that he carried was so important. And the passion that the older generation carries is contagious, and we need that. You know, the millennial generation is passionate, but we're looking for a passion to get behind. We're looking for something to get behind and to invest in. And, you know, so just the passion and the vision that I think, you know, Joshua felt from Moses, I think is important. Number three, Exodus 33:11. The Lord spoke to Moses face to face as a man speaks to his friend. When Moses returned to the other tents, his servant Joshua, the son of Nun, a young man, will leave the meeting tent. Moses taught Joshua to value the presence of God. And I think all of us in ministry have experienced that sometimes. I can't speak for you guys. I know I can speak for myself. That it's easy to get focused on ministry. It's easy to get focused on the task that we're performing or the service that we have coming up. And sometimes it's easy to forget to be part of the church. You know, it's easy to forget. What I know, like on the worship team and with our guys, we've tried to make an effort the last several years because we haven't always been good about it. Man, what programs are going on in the church? What's going on in the church? Because we can get in our own kind of bubble. And so us as, I think, the millennial generation, we need to be reminded that it's not just about what we can do. It's not just about our gifts, but it's about valuing the presence of God. I think it's cool that Moses took Joshua to the tent with him. He didn't say, wait outside while I go and I pray and I talk to God. He said, I want you to see how I talk to God, because the source of what God's doing, the source of the power, comes from my time with him. And so, yeah, we need to value the presence of God. Number four, I need to move fast because I know we have a lot to do. But the last one is Numbers 13:16. And he says, these are the names of the men whom Moses sent to spy out the land. Moses called Joshua with an H, I don't know how to say it, the son of Nun, and then Joshua. And obviously, with that last comment, I'm not a Bible scholar, but the research that I did and that I found was that Hosea, I guess, means salvation, but the name Joshua means God saves. And so I just wrote, you know, teach us to depend on Him. You know, the end, you know, what Joshua's name originally meant is salvation. He was going to bring salvation to a people. He was going to lead them into the promised land. And eventually that's what we're all called to do for our generation, to lead them to a relationship with Christ, a different life. But we have to remember that it's not going to be our own strength that does that. It's going to be relying on the Lord. It's going to be God who saves. It's not going to be our awesome services. It's not going to be how well we can sing or we can play from the stage. God's going to use that. That's important. We have gifts for a reason. But we need to lean on God, lean on the Holy Spirit to have the power to do those kind of things. And so I think just a practical way to do that, and one thing that I find helps me do that, is just to be challenged outside of our comfort zone sometimes. Sometimes it's easy. Like, it's not as difficult now after years and years to get up and do something I've been doing for a long time because I'm comfortable doing it. But when I get pushed beyond that as a young person, I realize, man, I really need to lean on God's strength. And most of the times I know, man, that wasn't me that did that. That was the grace of God. That was the power of God. And so I think that's maybe a practical way that with the next generation we can just kind of learn to lean on God. So anyway, that's it.
That's good.
Any questions? I hope that was okay.
Excellent.
Awesome. Great. I appreciate you guys so much, man. Just, it's cool being around PKs and just gotten to know some of you guys for many years. I know I'm just thankful. Are there any questions? Yeah.
I have a question. This might pertain to all of you guys now that I think about it, but you know, have there been times in your lives growing up as pastor's kids? Because I think about, you know, having little ones, and I'm sure you guys probably are in the same boat now. Just maybe certain things. I mean, I know you probably can't expose too much, but just certain things that maybe, like, even tips for us as new fathers to think about our sons and think generationally, and how can we best lead them to not essentially hate ministry, or, you know what I mean? Like, yeah. Obviously we're all trying to do our best, but we're all going to mess up. We're all going to make mistakes. Mm-hmm. So maybe even things that you personally saw that maybe you wish your fathers would have done better, or that you learned from. That you think, when I raise my kids, I want to do this better. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's a really good question, because you see that go both ways a lot. I think, don't be fake. Yeah, don't be fake.
That's rule
I
number
think
one.
Rule number
that's
one
basically.
Is
don't be fake.
Is don't be fake.
Rule number two is don't be fake.
Rule number three is be real.
Yeah.
So, but I think
we'll talk about fake words.
I think that's super important. Because if you see that growing up, then you just assume the church is fake.
Yeah.
You know, God's fake.
Yeah.
And so be real. I think I like what Taylor said about how it was never pushed on him.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was encouraged to have a relationship with God, but ministry was never pushed on him.
Yeah.
Because you have to make up your own mind. You know, you can't live out someone else's convictions. And then I think too, my parents did a really good job of just being parents, you know, being a family, you know, being able to not separate in a bad way, because in a lot of ways church was our life and we got that.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't like compartmentalized where we had to, you know, it was just who we were, is what we did. It wasn't their job, it was a lifestyle. And I think we bought into that lifestyle because it was genuine. They care about people. And so I think, you know, I think that's important.
Good.
Yeah.
What he said. Mine's a little different. My talk's a little bit different than these guys. That's why I think it works so well, because we've all kind of approached this conversation about the next generation from a completely different angle. And I'm a bit of a strategist, so if you know that about me, then you know where I'm going to approach this from, and that's about reaching. But let me tell you just quickly about myself. So I'm 32, father of three. I'll be 32 just shortly. Father of three, just had our third a couple weeks ago, 3 weeks ago. And so life is really fast-paced right now. Been involved with the church since I was 18. My dad threw me under the bus, and our children's pastor was leaving. And today he said, if you'll just be our children's pastor for a month, we'll find somebody, and we just need you. He said, don't lose any volunteers and don't lose any kids. And I said, you got it. And 9 months later, they replaced me with a children's pastor, and I had gained 3 kids and 2 volunteers, so I had one in that department. I did that. I've been the interim youth pastor, same, almost eerily similar situations, done young adults, been an associate pastor now. For the last 5 years, I've been the executive pastor, and so my dad has not seen or heard a staff meeting in 5 years. He has trusted me and entrusted me with a lot of responsibility and a lot of given me a lot of freedoms to cast vision. He does that. My dad, if you know my dad at all, if he was a painter, he would pick out the frame and then allow you to paint the rest of the picture. That's his leadership style. And so he's allowed me to paint a lot. And he's helped me a lot by creating the boundaries and saying, don't paint outside of these boundaries. And he's given me a lot of freedom there. So I gave this talk to our staff last year, and we've made a lot of changes since having this talk. So I want to give it to you. I call it the good and the bad and the ugly. There's not a lot of good, but there's a lot of bad, and there's a lot of ugly. And it's actually in your notes, so I'll just breeze over the stats. You'll have it for later. Here's the good. Millennials were staying inside of the church. You know, everybody talks about the millennials that are leaving, that they're leaving, they're leaving, they're leaving, and that's true. But the millennials who are staying inside of the church are actually the most hyper-committed group in your church. In fact, at their age, they are substantially more committed than any of the boomers or any of the other generations that are in your church. They are super committed. And so a lot of pastors are really comfortable because they're like, look, we've got the millennials, because there's 8 of them and they're on the front row raising their hands in worship. We're killing it. No, you've only got 8 and they're the only ones that are there. And so it can be really comfortable because we look and we see these kids that are just all in and their hearts are so passionate, and we've lost sight that no, we're actually not reaching them at all. And so millennials are great, and that's the conversation that everybody wants to pivot around, because millennials, 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 it's everywhere. But honestly, Generation Z is the next generation. They're 21 now. The Generation Z is 21. Millennials are 22. So the kids who are graduating high school, that's Generation Z. Totally different generation than the millennials. Completely. They're way more focused. They're substantially more interested in like the genuine. Their usage of social media is less than millennials. They're just a totally different group. We could talk about that, but that would take up all of our time. Here's the bad. 40 to 50% of young people who are active. I don't know if you guys remember this, but all those studies came out were saying, you know, 70% of millennials are leaving. But man, if they would just get involved in youth group, then they'll be saved. And then they're leaving because they're not involved. And what that is a total fallacy. All of these studies, Barna Group and David Kinnaman and some of these other ones, have studied these guys intensely. And 40 to 50% of young people who are actively involved, meaning they're serving in their youth group, serving in their church, every week plugged in, 40 to 50%. As a senior in high school, will leave the church and will not return. They haven't returned. The study, they're 30 years old, and they still haven't come back to church. 40 to 50% of them. 48% of millennials aren't attending church at least once a year. Millennials have a distorted view of what faith is. It's the gospel of sin management. So when they fail, they run from church and from God instead of running to it. Our neck of the woods, Southwest, they did a study of these. It's not a mega church, but it was a large church. 70 students that were involved, plugged in, as a senior in high school, all used alcohol at least once in their freshman year of college, dropped out, just totally left church, because how can I go back to church when I've done something so terrible? That's how I felt inside. I mean, in the scheme of things, how terrible is what they did? I mean, let's just get real honest. Unless they got drunk, they weren't even sinning, and yet they felt so guilty. Because that's the world that they've been raised in, is the gospel of sin management. So that's the bad. Here's the worse, ugly. 69% of Americans have a highly favorable, so not like good, like they have a highly favorable view of the church, yet 50% see no value in attending. Hey, the church is great, just doesn't work. The church is great, there's just no value for me. 50%. 80% of millennials who've left the church still identify as Christian. They have some form of Christian discipline, meaning they're praying, they're reading the Bible. So 8 out of 10 that have left the church, they're not in church at all, still believe in God, still pray to Him, they still read their Bible, and yet they don't see church as necessary. They don't see church as necessary. Number 3 is regular churchgoers have shifted from 6 times a month in 1980 to once every 6 weeks in 2015. Because again, they don't. What is the value? Why should I keep coming? Why do I come week in and week out? Why? Well, that's a huge question. So here's the questions. I wrote down three questions, and these are in your notes. But the questions we should be asking ourselves are these three questions. Number one, if some of the greatest communicators who've ever lived are one click away, why should a millennial come to my church? And I put a sidebar in there because I think this is an important conversation that we're not having enough yet because we're fascinated with campuses. And that's, why would they watch me on a screen if they can sit at home in their pajamas and watch Stephen Furtick, Andy Stanley, Brian Houston, Judah Smith all at the same time? And we're talking about marriage. They're single, and they're like, no, you know what? We were just talking about this. I want to know about faith, and I want to hear it from Stephen Furtick. Faith, Stephen Furtick. 27 different messages from Stephen Furtick on faith. So why? Why should they come to your church? Here's our answer. Our answer is this, and this is a canned answer, so I'm just going to read it, and then I want to talk about it. We want to offer three things every single time. Number one is intergenerational worship, not multi-generational worship. Intergenerational worship, it's different. Multi-generational worship says, our kids, we have a kids ministry. Our kids ministry is over in this building. Oh, you were youth? Oh, we've got a youth ministry. Our youth ministry is over in this building. Oh, you're a senior? Yeah, we've got a seniors ministry. They're over in this building. Oh, you're single? Man, we've got a singles ministry that's just killing it. They're over in this building. Oh, man, you're a young adult. We've got young adults ministry. They're over in this. So we've got millions of programs because we're a mega church, right? So we've got millions of programs that meet the need of everyone, and we're never gathering together as one. And one of the things that's so critical, like the ones who stayed, the critical components, intergenerational worship, meaning that they see a kid leading worship. That's one of the things we're going to do better in 2017 is getting our children, like our elementary age kids, on our stage leading worship. Like maybe on a special, once a quarter, maybe twice a year, where they can be on the stage and seeing their parents worship and seeing what kind of impact that has on intergenerational worship. So an 85-year-old is sitting next to a 20-year-old and they're worshiping the same God to the same song. That's intergenerational worship. So intergenerational worship. Number two is monthly opportunities to do things that are larger than yourself in the city, not in the church, but in the city. That's one of the things I love about Guts. We're here, and one of my favorite things is groceries. It's probably the most powerful thing that I get to see when I travel all around is the things that they do in the city. They're known. They are known in this city. Last time I was here, you guys did some crazy event. I don't even remember all the different details, but it just boggles my mind how big of a vision they have, and that's why when you look around, what do you see? You see young people because they want to be a part of something that's bigger than themselves. What can I do that's bigger than me? That's huge. And then number three, frequent opportunities to be a part of godly community. That's why life groups for our church are monumental. Life groups are everything for us because they can watch Stephen Furtick, they can watch Craig Rochelle, they can watch fill-in-the-blank pastor in the comfort of their home in their pajamas. What they can't get is godly community. Can't get it. You can't be in enough Facebook groups. You can't follow enough people on Snapchat to get what you can get in 1 hour with some of your great friends talking about Jesus. That's everything. So that's our answer to the first question. Why come to my church instead of sit at home and watch on a screen? For those three reasons. Intergenerational worship. Can't experience that on a screen. Can't experience something larger than yourself by sitting in your pajamas. And number three, you can't experience godly community. So two, what does my church do that is giving place to the next generation, and how am I intentionally growing them? That is a real question. Because if you're excited about getting millennials on stage, you are missing it because you should be having Generation Z on stage. The millennials should have been leading for so long that your congregation is ready for those ones that are in high school and graduating high school to be on your main stage. Not your teen stage, your main stage. So here's our answer. When we give youth a larger piece of the leadership pie, the pie grows for everyone else. When we give youth a larger piece of the leadership pie, the pie grows for everyone else. If there's 100 pieces in the pie and we give 70 of them to the youth, then guess what? The next pie we bake will have 120 pieces in it. That's the way it works. Because here's what I've been down, and it's so powerful. is a greater energy, results in greater engagement, results in greater influence, which results in greater impact. It's surreal. We've experienced this on every level of our church. Greater energy. That's the one thing that they have. They have in bundles is energy. Greater energy always results in greater engagement, which always results in greater influence, which always results in greater impact. Okay, we grow them by giving them safe places to fail. Probably the greatest thing my parents ever did for me was giving me safe spaces to fail. They gave me opportunities to fail, and they coached me up after I failed. They didn't try and ruin me with, well, you have to do it this way, you have to do it. But then they said, okay, maybe you should have done it a little bit differently. Think about doing it like this. So we want to give them safe spaces to fail, whether that's teaching a lesson in a 3-, 4-, and 5-year-old class, leading a small group of 4th-grade girls, teaching them from the main stage in student ministry regularly, leading worship in multiple environments. The greatest thing we can give is opportunity to be used by God. Let them find their passion and skills and give them a place to pursue it. Today, we're identifying them, providing them with weekly pastoral guidance and connection, and coaching them to become great leaders. We just did our 2017 leadership board. So we had 186 people's names on a board that were all underneath the age of 30. I think it was only a handful of them actually were over the age of 26. So most of those people were under the age of 26. And we sat down as a pastoral team and we assigned them to people. This is your team. Now go grow your team. Identify them, coach them up, give them opportunities. And so that's what it's all about. You've got to, if you're not identifying them intentionally, then you're not identifying them and you're not growing them. That's what it's all about. So that's number two. We place them, we identify them, we grow them. Number three, how do I make it valuable to attend church regularly? Honestly, this is not a next-gen conversation. This is an every-gen conversation. Our answer, by constantly asking ourselves, how will what happened on Sunday affect who they are on Monday? That's the question. My greatest fear, and this is from my heart, my greatest fear is that we'll have the most incredible lights and sound, and we will not be able to see and hear what's going on in their lives on Thursday morning. Because if it doesn't impact 80% of people that are in your auditorium, you probably shouldn't be speaking about it. I know all your pastor buddies from all your different universities love the idea of a series about the seraphim and the cherubim, but that's not what reaches people. And you've got a guy in your audience who's coming out of alcohol addiction. You got a girl in your audience who's a single mom with 3 kids. You've got a parent in your audience who their son just got a girl pregnant. And how is what you're speaking about on a Sunday morning affecting those people's lives? And if you'll treat it with that kind of thought process, it'll completely change the amount of people and the kind of people that you're reaching. So,
that's good.
That's it. Questions?
When you say you give youth the larger piece, what do you mean by youth age?
We have opportunities. So I'll give you a couple of names. There's a kid named Tyler Dameron who's a phenomenal. Like a level 10, 16 years old. At 16 years old, he was speaking twice a month to our children, to the elementary. Cassie Krupp, she's graduating high school this year. For the last 2 years, she's been leading worship on our stage, singing songs with a mic in her hand. She's the one singing. Kelsey Petty was raised in our church. She's now 22 years old. She's been leading on our stage. She's actually going to become our children's pastor. She is going to be the children's pastor. Of the 41 full-time staff members in our church, 28 of them are under the age of 30. We are intentional, highly intentional. So we're reaching, of our audience, about 24% are under the age of 35, between the age of 18 to 35, because we're being strategic, really strategic about reaching that group. Does that answer?
I was really intrigued when you said you put 186 names on your board.
Yeah.
These are people that you'd identified as attenders that are with the potential that we need to get them assimilated, connected, plugged in. And so you assign them to your staff members to sort of disciple them, connect them. They kind of own them.
Yeah, it was kind of like picking, honestly. It was like a schoolyard dodgeball team.
Like a draft.
Yeah, it was like a draft board. But in the sense of, like, I know them, I'm connected to them, they're mine, my team. You know, and so they all brought names. There was a lot of them. Like, you'd bring 3, 4, 5 names, and then we'd all spitball off of that. And so we had 2 sides of a whiteboard filled with names, just boom, 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 names, names, names. And then we said, okay, who wants them? And we actually had more, there was actually more than 186. But then there were 186 that were chosen. Those are the ones that were, there were some people who were like, I don't think they're ready for it. Scratch them off. So, yeah, literally.
Did you communicate, hey, our staff's been talking, we've identified you, we see potential in you, I want you to be a part of our team, believe me. Like, did you communicate that to them, or was it just kind of a...
It was, we tried to make it a little bit more low-key, honestly, okay. Because we didn't want to feel like anybody that wasn't on the board is not important, because they are. They're critical for us to keep growing and doing everything that we desire to do. The difference is they're kind of our Peter, James, and John in a sense that, like, we want to be able to single them out, bring them into the fold, give them ministry opportunities on our stage. You know, again, my dad has given me so much freedom. So I do a communicators group. I'll identify 12, 18 to 22 year olds, and I'm like, you've got it. The Spirit of God is all over you. You've got potential, kingdom potential. And so I'll sit down with them for 16 weeks, and they'll preach 5 messages with me. And they're in a room. We go around the room. And what did you love? Where did they lose you? Blah, 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 blah. We go around the room. So we do the communicators. At the end of it, my dad was like, hey, I want you to preach this weekend. And I was like, what if I had my team preach this weekend and I didn't? And he gave me the opportunity. He trusted me enough. And he said, okay. So I had the three best ones from that. They came up and they gave a 10-minute talk, and they were like blown away. It's like, okay, one, I'm speaking to a mega church. I'm 18 years old, and God is using me to speak to them. So giving people opportunity and seeing like, okay, I don't have to be on staff here to have opportunity. I don't have to be a pastor to be used by God, and that God has a place for me no matter what my age is. That's huge.
I know we probably got to get running here soon. I want to just throw this out to you guys. We can hang around for a few minutes and talk and exchange numbers. One tension that I know we went through, because our church has very Pentecostal roots, and so I'm charismatic, if you will. So we went through a huge transition and kind of paid a price for it to reach unchurched people, to be that church that is beating to reach people far from God. But I think that there's kind of this fallacy in church world and in leadership that says you have to pick or choose. One pastor calls it a dumb dichotomy, that it's almost like if I want to have a church that's deep and a church that reaches other people, I have to do one at the expense of another. And it's just not true. It couldn't be further from the truth. So I think that every one of these guys would echo this, but at our church, our goal is bring them from fan to friend to follower. And so Ed Young Jr. is huge on this. Build a shallow end in the pool. Let them splishy splashy in there and pee in the pool. Let them just be young baby believers that don't have it all figured out yet, and just make space for them to grow in maturity. And then have some places where people can swim deep, but just make sure that deep is always connected with doing, right? I mean, that's what James was all about. Hey, let put some action to your faith. So for us, we just tried to redefine deep and make sure that people saw that, hey, true spiritual depth and maturity is when I say, this isn't about me anymore. And so we always say, hey, at this table called the church, babies wear bibs, adults wear aprons. So, like, the moment when you transition from taking from the table to bringing something to the table, that's the true mark of maturity. Mm. And I guarantee you, every one of these guys in different capacities, they've been intentional about building both of those ends of the pool, so to speak. One day they're going to swim in the depths, but make sure they understand that swimming in the depths, Ed Young Jr. is famous for saying, all rescues happen in the deep, right? And so I just wanted to throw that out there. Michael, do you want to throw anything, Taylor, before we hit the road? You guys have been amazing. Pastor Pat.
Yeah, I've been blessed to know your families for a long time. You two on the end for 33 years, your father and mother for 14 years, and got hooked up with the Shears 2 years ago. Here's what's amazing to me. They could put a sheet up in front, and I could listen to you guys with ever not seeing your faces and never met you, and I could pick who belongs to who, what track they've been grooved in, and how much more, basically, I hate to tell them, more potential in you guys than they ever have. So I won't never, we'll cut that off. But anyway, that's amazing. That's biblical. And thank you guys for
Thank you. That's so good.